This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin, and we're here once again to answer your questions.
Hi, this is Cindy from the great state of Georgia.
My name is Mamadou.
Hi, this is Noah.
This is Arielle calling in from Washington, D.C.
I was wondering if you could clarify a contradiction regarding COVID-19 germs entering our mouth.
How do I apply to be a contact tracer?
I am concerned about the vulnerability of undocumented people's personal information.
How long are asymptomatic carriers of COVID-19 contagious?
Are there public health exceptions to HIPAA?
What do you think we have gotten right so far in our mitigation efforts?
Thank you so much.
NPR journalists and outside experts are on hand to offer solid facts, to tell you what we know, and to correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. Send us your questions about the virus, about the economy, or just about how we're all trying to adjust to these times. Send those to npr.org/nationalconversation or on Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. But every night we begin by answering the question, what happened today? After years of growth, the economy shrank 4.8% in the first 3 months of the year. The GDP was driven down by stay-at-home orders, which led to less consumer spending. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell warned there is worse to come.
Overall, economic activity will likely drop at an unprecedented rate in the second quarter.
An experimental drug called remdesivir is showing some promise for treating COVID-19 in a study of more than 1,000 patients. Dr. Anthony Fauci was cautious while speaking about the drug, saying results needed more analysis but are still significant.
We think it's really opening the door to the fact that we now have the capability of treating.
The head of the California Teachers Union said the governor's idea to reopen schools by the summer may be overly optimistic.
Because we have to make sure that, you know, we have the necessary items in place in order to make sure that our schools are going to open in a safe manner for our students, for our educators, and for the communities in which they are in.
Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo said her state has turned to the private sector for testing, symptom tracking, and contact tracing.
You know, in an ideal world, you'd like to think the federal government would have a robust nationwide public health response. In the absence of that, the governor has to get it done.
As you just heard there, contact tracing is rapidly becoming a tool public officials think can be put in place to reopen areas faster. No surprise you had a lot of questions about that. So joining us now to answer your questions is NPR Selena Simmons-Duffin, who reports on health policy for Selena. Welcome. So good to hear from you.
Hi, Michelle. Nice to hear from you.
So you've actually been surveying the states about this very issue. What have you found?
Right. We were able to get data from 42 states, and the total they currently have added up to 7,600 contact tracers. But most states said that they were planning a hiring surge. And after that, we will have 36,600 contact tracers nationally. And even though that sounds like a lot, it is way less than many have been calling for the country to be in good shape to reopen. Those estimates are for 100,000 contact tracers or more. So a long way to go.
Is there anything that stood out to you as you were doing your reporting on this? Any particular state that stood out?
Oh, my gosh. There were so many surprises. North Dakota is way ahead of all the other states in the proportion of contact tracers. Texas is working towards hiring 4,000 contact tracers. So it was really gratifying to get all these responses and pull them together. And you can use the state lookup tool on NPR.org to see how your state stacks up.
All right. So let's go to the questions from listeners. Our first is from Brenda in the San Francisco Bay Area. Let's listen.
Can you please explain how contact tracing will take place? I am a nurse in the emergency department, and I have tested positive. My question is, was exposure from a patient or another coworker or perhaps someone at the grocery store? How does one person trace back their exposure versus an entire nation? Thank you so much.
That's a great question. So, Selena, what do you think?
So the idea of contact tracing is forward looking. So it's not to try to trace back who you might have gotten it from. It's to try to trace who you might have exposed when you first had the virus. And those people might not be sick yet, but they might be in danger of getting sick. So to do this, a contact tracer would call Brenda and ask her to think back to who she had contact with for 2 days before she had symptoms. And the CDC's definition of a contact is someone you are within 6 feet of for about 10 to 30 minutes. So then Brenda would give a list as best as she could recall of who she might have been close to. And then those people could be reached and asked to quarantine. And that's how you stop the train of transmission.
Oh, interesting. So she's not trying to think about who infected her. She's trying to think about who she may have unwittingly infected before she knew. Well, that's important. So let me just note here that Brenda told us that she is well again. She has been cleared to return to work tomorrow after several weeks in isolation. So I just wanted to let everybody know that Brenda's doing well. So we're very glad to hear that. Okay. Our next question is about how this all works.
I keep hearing people say we're going to need an army of contact tracers. So I've got a lot of questions about that. What skills and equipment these contact tracers need, who's going to pay them, how will they be hired, managed, and how will their performance be evaluated? What kind of information technology support will they need?
Selena, so what do we know about that?
Well, there's a lot packed in there. But the good news is that public health officials know how to do this because they do it all the time for things like HIV and syphilis or measles or tuberculosis. The skills that you need to be a contact tracer are really most importantly, empathy, because the people you're talking to are sometimes sick and they're often scared, and you need to earn their trust and respect their confidentiality. In terms of equipment, you don't need a lot. One contact tracer I spoke to in DC explained to make his calls, he goes in a windowless room in his basement and he uses a special headset and a computer program that can safely input people's private information. And as for the questions about hiring and paying for this new workforce, I think state and local health departments are scrambling to figure all of that out right now. There is a push for Congress to specifically fund a contact tracing workforce, but it hasn't yet. And in the meantime, some states are hoping to use volunteers to be able to scale this up without a ton of cash.
If you have a question about contact tracing, you can still send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation or share on social media using the hashtag NPR Conversation. Selena, you mentioned privacy. So here's a question we got about that, about privacy, from Robin in Jonesville, Arkansas.
I have a daughter that works as a healthcare professional in a senior living center where two residents have tested positive, unfortunately, one of which has died. She and her colleagues have not been given the identities of these persons and have been told that the families do not want that information disclosed. How are they to do complete contact tracing without this information? Are there public health exceptions to HIPAA?
Selena, I think that's also a great question, and it's tricky because I think everybody who's been to the doctor in recent years knows about, you know, HIPAA. How do you answer his question?
Right. It totally is tricky. In a public health emergency, the rules around health privacy bump up against the need for actionable public health information. The federal government here has dialed back certain privacy rules. For instance, you mentioned going to the doctor. You usually get a written notice about HIPAA, which is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. That's been waived. So you're not getting those written notices right now. In this specific case that Robin's talking about, HIPAA isn't really at issue, according to some law professors I ran this by. Some facilities will just cry HIPAA when there's health information at play. And the truth is, you can do a lot to notify people they've been exposed without revealing names, like looking at visitor schedules or medical appointments and letting the contacts who were in touch with those two residents know that they have been exposed so that they can quarantine without saying who exposed them.
Okay, here's another question. I think we have time for a couple more. This is Cindy. Here she is.
Hi, this is Cindy from the great state of Georgia. Instead of hiring 300,000 public health workers to do contact tracing, would it not be more efficient to have the federal government establish an online self-reporting tool? The public health officials could start to outreach based on the data provided by the patient.
Selena, what about that?
There are two reasons why I do not think that would work very well. First of all, the government would have to build it. And second of all, people would have to fill it out. And one of the reasons why contact tracing works is that it's personal. It's kind of an art to earn people's trust and encourage them to voluntarily do something for the greater good, like isolate and not leave their house for 2 weeks. So if this is a nameless, faceless website asking you to input your contacts to the government, I don't think a lot of people would comply. And in public health, the more people who participate, the more effective these methods are.
Well, it's a little like the census, isn't it? I mean, you are encouraged to self-report, but the government still sends a bunch of people out to follow up, right? So it's kind of like that.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay, here's a question from Jean, who wants to get involved.
How do I apply to be a contact tracer? I've tried online searches. I called my town human services, but I really don't know where to go from here.
All right. Selena?
Yeah, it's a total patchwork. There's no like national portal to raise your hand for this work. I know a lot of people have this question because I get emails and tweets every day from people who want to do this and are trying to figure out how to get these jobs. I think a lot of health departments are just in the planning stages here. I know in Massachusetts, they worked with this nonprofit Partners in Health a few weeks back to start hiring 1,000 tracers. And I found those listings easily online, and other states might just be a few steps behind.
All right. That is NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin, who reports on health policy. Selena, so nice to hear your voice. I hope to see you in person again soon sometime.
Likewise, Michelle. Thanks so much.
You can hear much more of our extensive coverage when you download the NPR One app. Go to the Explore tab and click on the coronavirus outbreak for a curated stream of stories. And if you have questions, we want to help. You can keep sending them. Go to npr.org/national conversation or in social media. Use the hashtag NPR Conversation. Up next, many pandemics in the past. We'll answer your questions about what we can learn from the past, especially from the Spanish flu.